your favorite toy truck nerds are back. Welcome to That Scale RC Show.
So Haley, do you have any, or I guess what's your RC plans for the rest of the year? Like, are you planning on any big events or just still continuing just traveling and doing like recording for your shows and whatnot?
Yeah. So the next thing I'm going to A-Main Hobbies, I'm going to visit their new facility down in Chico. I'm so excited because it's like, 64,000 square feet. They have like a drift course, carpet track, indoor rock crawling, outdoor rock crawling. Have you guys been to their new spot yet?
No, and I actually haven't even been to their old spot. So I was trying to think, because we were up there.
I know, I haven't either.
Because we were up there in Redding in 2016 for an event from NorCal Rock Crawlers. But yeah, we never went by A-Main.
It looks cool.
The two times we've been there. Two times that we went there was when we went to Axial Fest, and like that was the old location. And oh my God, it's like when you're a little kid and you go to Toys R Us for the first time, you know, like, I don't know if you remember like that level of excitement when you're little, but like, that's what it was. It was just like, oh my God, this place is amazing. And so I can't even imagine what that new facility will be like.
Yeah. Their 25th anniversary, I think. And they're inviting like a couple other influencers. I think Josh and Mark Santa Maria will be there and some others. So it'll be cool to like meet new people and check out the spot. And I think they're also celebrating their grand opening and stuff of the new facility. So yeah, that'll be part of like my hobby shop tour. They said they'd give us an interview and stuff. So that'll be nice.
Awesome. So when is that?
So that's in like 3 weeks. And then right when I get back from that, I'm heading to Barcelona for the F1 race. So then I'm finishing my F1 car, like hopefully in the next week or so, headed to Chico, then Barcelona, and then back. And then I'll have a little more time to think about what am I doing next? Probably moving maybe to my new spot, up north. And I still have an SCX6 video. Everyone's like, where's your SCX6 video? But it's so hard to film such a big truck by myself. So I might need some help with that one. I was maybe going to commandeer Jay to help film the SCX6 video.
That would be really fun.
Maybe.
Totally down. Sweet. That would be a really good spot for it because there's some really big terrain there too. So
awesome. Yeah, nice. Facebook people were telling me.
Fortunate.
Might be able to even convert Jay to be getting a SCX6.
I don't know. They're so
big. Hey,
they're freaking huge. Yeah,
they are. So but like my SCX6, I love that thing. It just looks super scale. The way, just watching the suspension work, it's something about that large of a scale vehicle, you know, traversing everything. It just looks so much like the real thing. Like, I don't know, 1/10. Sometimes it just looks a little still like a, lack of better words, toy. Like it doesn't really move like the real thing, but the 6 moves like the real thing.
More realistic. So,
yeah, it's way more realistic.
Springs are everything. Like shock springs and sidewall flex on tires. That's like the whole key to having something look realistic like that.
Yeah.
So no, I mean, I'm sure they're fun. It's just that and like the $1,000 price tag is pretty
yeah. They're having a sale actually. They just told me, Horizon Hobby said they're doing like $200 off for Memorial Day. So
that's actually really good.
Yeah, I heard that Horizon's got a pretty big Memorial Day sale going on. Somebody else posted something. Where did I see it? Base camp was going to be on like $100 off or something like that.
Oh sweet.
I saw that on the Basecamp page on Facebook, I believe. Somebody posted a birdie told me that they're going to have some sort of sale. So get your pennies ready.
That's probably what, only $200 or $300 then, right?
Something like that.
Wow. Yeah, that's really good, actually. Super good.
Yeah. I'm actually still in the middle of trying to get that MKS servo in the six. If I can ever get a servo horn for it.
Oh, you're really?
Well, because did I ever show you that one? The massive, the things like the size of my hand.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Thomas sent me.
That's something you don't really think about. Like, is like just little stuff like that. Like, it's such a big truck. Like, a servo horn is like not an easy item to find.
Well, you know? No, it's not that. It's the fact that similar. So Jay, I know you're a little familiar with this, but like, you know, their X6 series, the red servos, you know, how they have the hub on it because they have a really big, output shaft.
Yeah.
This thing is the same way. They have a hub on it. So you have to have an adapter, to go onto it. And when I got it so long, I mean, I've been sitting on that for a little over a year now. The servo, when he first sent it to me, all I had was the hub. So he's like, I can have our guy machine you something out of carbon, but that's all I can do right now. And I was like, okay. And we've been just working on it ever since, just never really finished getting all the dimensions worked out. Because I've been just kind of measuring what was on the stock servo and kind of like where it sits in relation to everything, and then trying to copy that over. So then that way I can get that monster to sit in there, because it's so big, and it's also a direct power servo. So I'm going to have to come up with a wiring harness to get the power, but then send other signal to the transmitter. But yeah.
Yeah, that's an ordeal. There's just all these like things that you have to keep in mind that is just so foreign to me that I've never even thought about with those rigs. So.
Well, then the other thing too, and I learned this from Thomas, is, and because we've kind of touched base on this in the 10th scale world, like, you know, how like none of the bodies are ever like consistent. Like some bodies, they say it's 10th scale, but it's the same size as like the Jeep is the same size as a Chevy, or the Chevy's smaller than the Jeep and all that. There's not like a universal 10th scale. It's the same thing with, I guess, 5th scale servos. Some people say a 5th scale servo is like the size of the servo that's come stock in the SEX6, and then Thomas said they made theirs to what was true fifth scale, like what they put in the I forget what he said, the fifth scale buggies, and like that's why this
thing's Baja or something.
Yeah, so he said, so that's why he said this thing's so much bigger, because he goes, that's what they truly would put in the fifth scale. So it's just hard. So I even have to kind of modify the mounting to get that thing to fit. So one of these days.
Ty at Tekin has one, and I've just, I mean, aside from like the two of you, there's really nobody else that I've talked to besides Ty about the SCX6. And he was telling me, like, you know, cause I said, I was like, you know, if you guys are going to offer like motors and stuff for these, what are you going to use? I mean, is this like something that you're going to have to do like a whole new product line for or whatever? And I guess they're using like 8-scale truggy motors in them is what he ended up going with. It's like brushless truggy stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah, these things are big. I want to say the motor that comes stock, that Spectrum, is like the size of a soda can.
Yeah, that's what crazy. I heard. Yeah, like somebody, they're just ridiculous.
It's kind of nuts. Yeah, Knight Custom sent me, because I guess the body for the honcho body is same as the metric, the 1/10 scale metric body that they make for, I think it's a Purline body. So a lot of the stuff, his parts, if you scale them up, I think he said to like scale them up to like 160, but I ended up going like 120, and it was for all the parts, and they ended up sizing up fine.
Oh,
but,
nice.
See,
so
and
yeah, scale's yeah, and weird.
And you got the honcho. So I was always like, so when the Jeep first came out, I just wasn't, you know, I just wasn't a fan of getting the Jeep body. That's why we switched it over to the Cadillac. But the honcho.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I haven't seen yours. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah. I had it out at Axial Fest 22, I think. Yeah, 22. Because, yeah, this was just 23. Yeah, I was so bummed this year. This year, I don't know, or last year, I don't know what I did, but I loaded up the six and forgot the remote on the bench, got all the way up to Axial Fest. And Ilya was like, let's take the sixes out. And I was like, all right, let's do it. And then I was like, I was like, the remote's back home. And he's like, oh, just bind it to something else. And I was like, I can, but then I got to figure out, because it's all the stock electronics. I was like, I got to reset all the shifts so you can have the first and second gear. And I was like,
yeah.
That's when I just said, ah, forget it. I'm just going to leave it in the truck. So this year I got to make a note, just bring everything.
Yeah. I've had to like label all my transmitters. I have like, I don't know, like 30 transmitters. It's crazy. And so I just put on the bottom SCX6, TRX4, whatever, you know, trying to label everything. It's helped out a lot.
So I guess that's a good question to ask you. So you're more of like, do you just keep like one transmitter for each rig, or do you have any where you get like the Spectrum, like the DX5 rugged or whatever, and put like multiple rigs on one receiver?
I guess I kind of have both, where like Traxxas, a lot of the ready to run stuff will come with its own transmitter. So I'll try to kind of keep, you know, one, especially if you want to like have someone drive a rig. And so it's, you know, you want to share your cars and stuff with people, which I try to do. I want people to like try them out and stuff. But if I'm building a car, like the F1 car and stuff, I usually tie it to like a Spectrum transmitter where there's one transmitter, multiple cars and stuff, where I know like not that many other people are going to be driving it. So,
see, and yeah, that's the problem that I have, because I only have, because I have two Spectrum remotes. I have the DX4 Pro, I think, and the DX5. And most of my rigs are on those two. So just subconsciously, I thought, okay, I'm throwing the six in there. I didn't even think that it was on its own remote. And I just was like, okay, not even thinking. And then that's when the mistake happened.
Yeah, it's hard. It's nice to have one. But then even when I did like the 5K at Axial Fest and I had my DX5 Pro, it's so freaking heavy when you're running and stuff. I'm like, this was a mistake. I should have just taken like a little tactic or whatever and linked it to this, because they're, you know, they can be kind of heavy. So it depends on what you're doing. But
yeah. Well, the one thing I do like is now that Horizon has acquired Spectrum, and that's like their go-to. I think, well, pretty much ever since, I guess you back it up, since Horizon acquired Axial, you now have moved on from the tactic, and you're actually getting Spectrum, and you're actually, I feel, getting better out of the box, ready to run remote that you almost don't need to, you know, upgrade. So it's really nice.
Well, and you don't have to buy a new receiver either, because you can just, like, for me, I have a DX5C, I think, is the one I have. Five or six.
That's what I think. That's the one I have.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's like pretty much like what my nice rigs use, you know? And that was one of the cool things, is just, you know, whether it had their telemetry or whatever, you know, any of their RTR receivers, it just bind right to it. But like what Haley was saying, I mean, I was like looking around when you guys were talking, and I've got, I think, 18 RTR radios above me on the shelf here. So, but I mean, it's a nightmare. Like, I write what vehicle it is in silver Sharpie on the bottom of it and stuff, and it's a lot of batteries to keep track of and stuff. But I mean, really though, I mean, it's nice for like sticking a radio in somebody's hands. Like if I'm out somewhere and some kid's like, oh, that's cool, you know, and like, well, you want to try it, you know? And so it's, I don't know. I think it's good if you're, you know, sharing rigs with people and stuff like that and letting them check stuff out. Cause the majority of the stuff that we have here is all, you know, like somewhat modified RTRs. And so, you know, you want people to drive them so they can get a good sense of what they would be buying. So I think that's one of the reasons that I try and leave them all that way.
Yeah. I think I only have like one or two rigs that I have a dedicated remote. I know my deadbolt has one. Cause that was always like my loaner rig. I think Thomas from MKS has borrowed it. My other buddy, when he came up with his kids at the last Axial Fest at Donner, he drove it. Michelle's driven it a handful of times. That's pretty much just like my go-to. Like somebody shows up and they're like, I don't have anything to run, I just go, here you go. Cause it's like, kind of like you said, Jay, like a slightly modified stocked rig. Like there's not a whole lot to it.
Yeah, if you don't have a ton of functions and it's not like, you know, you need eight channels or whatever, When I'm doing like an FPV car, or if I have like some lighting, or, you know, shift servos out the wazoo, like you want a height, you know, something you can program. But my friend was actually asking me yesterday, she's like, my Tactic went out. What should I get? I'm like, you know, if you're just using two or three channels, you can get, I would recommend getting a transmitter where the receivers are cheap. So, cause that's the one thing I don't like about Spectrum transmitters is the receivers are like 70, 80 bucks. It's crazy. So, you know, if you can get a transmitter that's pretty cheap and receivers are like 20 bucks and, you know, depends on what you're using it for, but
yeah, I found some 2 and 3 channel Spectrums. It's been a while since I bought one, but whatever factory they're using overseas, that factory is selling bootleg ones of it. Like, it's got Spectrum stamped into the case and everything. I mean, it's their receiver, but the label is just slightly different. And I was getting those for like 30 bucks. So nice.
I was going to say,
they're not fancy though. I mean, they do the job.
I was going to say before the, and I always get this wrong. What is it? They call it the DSMR or whatever their newer technology is. Just before that one, you used to be able to find the other style Spectrum receivers, like I think like the SR300s and 200s and whatever, which was basically a 3-channel, 2-channel, whatever. You used to be able to find those on Amazon fairly cheap. But then once they switched to the DSMR, they're pretty much all the same price. It doesn't matter if you find it on Amazon, go directly to like A-Main or to Spectrum or Horizon. It doesn't matter. They're all still about the same price.
I'll have to look for the link so I can send that to you, because I always forget that you're a Spectrum guy. So that's something.
Yeah. I've been on Spectrum pretty much ever since I got into RC, just mainly because the buddy.
Me too. Like,
yeah.
Like people would like flick us a lot of shit in racing and stuff when we had Spectrum radios, you know, and like Travis, he had a, Airtronics, I think is what he ended up going with. But I mean, like everybody was like, oh, you need a Futaba or you need this or that. And I was just like, dude, like there's so many cars and the receivers are so much money that it doesn't make sense, you know? So yeah, Spectrum has been kind of the choice ever since.
Yeah. It's kind of like batteries and chargers. It's like pick one and then, you know, kind of stick with it. It's going to be probably the easiest if you have a lot of cars and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, what's the difference? Honestly, I feel like the ranges are all the same. Are you going to get a better, longer range with a different one? I don't know.
I haven't had a range issue in I don't know how long. I mean, even with like the AE's little XP RTR radios, I haven't had a range issue with anything like that. I mean, of course, the technology's come such a long way since we first got into the hobby, though, but. Yeah, and like with us, like the other thing that I do is Dean's connectors on everything, because like for one, everything.
Dean's?
Yeah, well, everything that we have comes with Dean's, you know. And so somebody was giving me some shit the other day on.
Yeah, a lot of the element stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, it makes sense, and so I just make everything Dean's connectors. I was like, you don't have an XT60? Oh my god! Blah 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 blah.
They're just harder to solder because the soldering point is a lot smaller. So I mean, that's kind of
What I've always thought was funny was I always felt like behind the curve with the battery connectors, because when I first got into it, my buddy set me up with everything was on the Traxxas plugs, just because they carry the Traxxas batteries in their shop. So I just used what was available, and he was like, yeah, we just do that. And they're not that hard to solder, yada, yada, yada. And then I went to my first event up in the Sacramento area, and one of my batteries died. And this guy was like, oh, here, borrow mine. And then like, he handed it to me and I'm going, I can't plug this in mine. He goes, you're not running Dean's. And I'm like, no. And then like, they were like giving me a hard time for running Traxxas. So then
your name is Adam Dean.
And then, I got rid of the Traxxas, went to Dean's, and then of course, like everything switched over to Dean's, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, you're running Dean's? Why aren't you running XT60? And you're like, I'm not going through this again. I don't have the time to sit there and cut all these off and resolder it all. So I just keep an adapter in my bag and that's it. Cause in case somebody needs to borrow something, whatever, it's just easier.
Yeah.
I never did fully grasp soldering the Traxxas connectors. I was so bad at those. I mean, like, just never. And then there was, I forget which one it was. They're kind of like, are the XT60s the blue ones or the yellow ones?
Yellow ones.
Yellow. yellow and
black. Okay. There's a blue one that Horizon used.
Those are the IC3s. Mm-hmm. Those are the
Horizon suck to solder. Like if you have it spill out of the little cup at all, you can't get it to push down and lock into the plastic sleeve. And I mean, just that's one of the reasons why like the Dean's ones is because you just throw some heat shrink tubing over it and you're done. I mean, it doesn't have to
cover it up.
Amazing. So the Dean's aren't bad. So what I usually use is that little thing they call it. What is it? The extra hands with the two little claws or whatever.
Helping hands.
Yeah, I use that. Yep. I just hold it. Solder it, then flip it over, do the other one, and I'm done. That's all I use. I know some people buy, like, I think, like, Todd Norton, I think he was telling me about, he's like, I got the jig for it, so it just holds it all in one, and then he just solders it. But I was like, that jig's like another, like, at the time was like 50 or 60 bucks. I'm like, the helping hands works. I'm just going to stick with it. But
the helping hands is good. And then the other thing that I use is locking forceps. Like, those work really, really good for just, you know, holding the wire and everything. Yep. So. That's a really useful tool. Yeah, somebody had said they tried to make the comparison of like, Dean's plugs are the new Tamiya plug. I was like, dude, nothing like the Tamiya plug. Like, those are so bad and like can't handle current. Like,
when I first started in RC, like a long time ago, with like the little white clip, and you're like,
yep.
Yeah, yep. And like pins are hollow. It's just like stamped metal that's folded around. Like, they're not even like a solid piece of metal. I was like, come on, dude, it's not that bad. So
yeah,
that was Art Eastridge. He was giving me crap about it. I don't know if he listens to the show, but Art, that was an exaggeration, buddy.
yeah it's always funny like to watch the trends in RC, especially in the crawling. They just go all over the place. And I always feel like it somewhat goes in a circle. So we eventually make it back to where we were, but I don't know. The battery. Yeah.
Like servo on axle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
well, yeah, we started that with servo on axle. And then now people are going back to servo on axle, especially if you're building like a performance rig.
Yeah. I remember getting crap about having servo on axle on like my very first SCX-10. And like Ty was giving me hell about it. It's like, oh, it looks not scale looking and blah blah blah, you know, it's better to have it at CMS. And so I was like, okay, you know, do CMS and stuff. And then like CMS is popular for a couple of years, and then now it's like everybody's like, I want to get rid of the three link with a panhard, I want four link in SOA, and like that's like the new thing now. So it's funny how that stuff works.
And then the whole thing from going from I guess you could say more like performance, and then everyone wanted to go scale, and then now it's kind of like reverted back to everybody wants performance rigs. Well, at least here in California, because I know like Rock Pirates RC, they're blowing up and all their rigs are low, chopped up bodies and just making them work. They don't look scale at all, but they work. So
that's how it is up here too.
Going like straight up these lines, crazy. Yeah.
So
I mean, that's fun. Like, ideally, like having one of those, and then other stuff is cool too. But I you know, I don't think that could be like my only choice. I mean, like having a rig that can do anything kind of gets boring after a while, because like some of the fun is in the challenge of like having to work at it, you know, and like switch your lineup and like actually, you know, try like having something that just, you know, just walks right up whatever you pointed at. It's like kind of gets old after a while.
Well, it's a catch 22, because sometimes it gets old always trying to work your rig up something where you can just be like, oh, for once I can just crawl and BS with my buddies and not even worry about it.
Keep up with everyone.
Yeah, that too.
I'm a quitter though. So like, I have no problem just quitting and be like, you know what? I'm not going to make it up this one. Time to just move on to something else here.
Oh, I do that all the time.
I try a different obstacle.
Oh, I can't tell you how many people give me crap on the trail about that. They'll be like, I'll attempt it like two or three times. I just go, all right, I'm over it. We'll just pick it up and go on to the next one. And they're like, you're really not going to try? And I said, I'm here to have a good time. I don't need to climb up this and, you know, conquer the trail. I'm just like, okay, whatever.
Well, it kind of, Travis, I guess, is kind of the one that changed how I approached that stuff, because when we would go out, we would film stuff together and everything, and he would get so irritated with me when I would spend like 5 minutes on one thing trying to get up it. And he's like, it doesn't matter if you can get all the way up it. I only need, you know, like 15 seconds of something good. Like, you're wasting so much time, you know? And so he kind of like had weaned me off of doing that to where now it's just like, ah, you know what, let's just move on. So yeah, that really annoyed him.
Well, if that annoyed him, oof, I got a story for him. So one of the events that we went to back when GSRCC was doing events, we were at this one at Rock City at Mount Diablo, and the backside of this trail was just all roots, like tree roots and everything. And this one guy was out there with his TF2, and he was like, he got stuck on everything, and everyone behind him was waiting because he would not give up. It took him like 30 minutes to make it up this one thing, because like up that part of the trail, everybody else is like getting so frustrated, but he's like determined, like, I gotta crawl this. And then that's when like there were people that just like, all right, we're going around, or oh, we're just, yeah, because they were so frustrated with how long it was taking. And that's kind of also the reason why I'm like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy that's holding everybody up. So if I can't make it, all right, we're picking it up and we're going forward. Let the next person try.
You have to be that way at Axial Fest. Like, you have to let people play through, otherwise.
Yeah, but so the new Rob's Resort is not really. Rob's Resort's not really that way. Rob's doesn't have a lot of the natural terrain that Donner has, and or Cisco has. So it's a lot of man-made. So there really isn't a lot of stuff that you can't make it up, because a lot of it's flat. And then you have a lot of like the weird obstacles. Like, you go down the elevator, whatever you want to call it. And they got a lot of suspension bridges and whatnot. And I know Elio's got the little rock course that's going through, like the little creek stream thing that's going down the center. So there is some, you know, obstacles. Like, I don't want to like deter anybody, but it's not like those granite slabs that you're trying to make it up with the like tire swallowers that are in there.
Mm.
Yeah, because I remember like the creek beds and stuff at Cisco were crazy. Yeah, me neither.
No, it's fun. It's what I like about it is it definitely brought the camping aspect back to it, because now you're not camping in a parking lot. You're actually camping in a meadow. So it's more like you're,
that's cool,
you know, back to normal camping. Just kind of sucks that we don't have, they just don't have like the crazy, you know, obstacles anymore. But it's getting there. The guy wants to put a ton of money into it. So whoever, I don't know if he's like a new owner or if he just decided to start spending money, because he's all about bringing in rock. Because he was telling, because Elio's been in contact with him a lot. And I guess he told Elio that he's planning, as soon as the snow melts, which they still have a little bit of snow, he's going to bring in like the dump truck size trucks full of rock in. So that way you can, so, you know, make whatever, you know, if you want to make, add it to that river creek course that he's got going on, or if you want to add it to any of the other little areas. So he's trying to actually bring more in. So that way, when you do have these events, you know, people aren't complaining about the terrain as much. Cause that like seems to be the new complaint. And then the other thing is it's a lot of people that just haven't been there yet, and they just still, you know, are stuck on the Cisco thing. Mm.
Yeah, which I get. I mean, like, but Cisco was also like unusual, you know, like that's, you're very lucky to have some place like that.
Well, Cisco was unusual. And the really sad part was everyone thinks like it was Axial's fault that it's not there anymore. They sold. And then the new owners, I think they, within like the first 2 years, like the new owners were like, yeah, we're going to continue doing Axial Fest. But then they decided they wanted to renovate everything. And then it took them like a year to do renovation. Then COVID hit, and then they had, and then the, then that general store caught on fire. And then ever since then, it's just been like, MIA. Nobody knows what's going on. So
I won't, I'll mention this later, but it just, what? That kind of made me think of something. It was just like, you know, you just rattled off all this stuff like renovations, and then COVID hit and everything. And so I'm sitting here thinking like financial difficulty and stuff. And then the store catches on fire. It's like, huh, insurance fire. Okay. You know, like,
but it will also, yeah. But the other thing,
purely speculating, I'm just speculating. Nobody freak out when they hear this and think that I'm being an ass. I'm just saying it's like,
well, no, I mean, that goes through a lot of people's minds with a lot of stuff. But I mean, there is no secret that there's a lot of transients in that area. So for all we know, Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So that was another big problem. So when Axial Fest was getting really big, I want to say like 2017, 2018, the problem that they had is there was a lot of there's a lot of people coming in that weren't even part of Axial Fest. And they just saw that there was a ton of campgrounds and there's campers and stuff. And they just thought it was opportunity to come and do whatever. And that was one problem that we had at Cisco that nobody ever wants to talk about is the theft. The theft was really bad at Cisco.
I remember Elio saying a bunch of people took a bunch of his stuff on the scale. So there was,
there was that. There was another guy that was out of Utah that he did a bunch of scale tents and everything. And he came out and he had everything in his, and since he wasn't really, I guess, also prepared, he came out in his car and he just had a ground tent and all that. And when they went to the closing ceremonies, like all their awards and everything, he just threw everything in his tent, zipped it up, went to the award ceremony. He came back and there was a big slash in the side of his tent and they just like took everything.
Crazy.
But that's the thing with, that was the hard part with the way Cisco was set up. There, it was hard unless you had someone sitting in your camp. Somebody could stay behind in the camp next to you. You could completely abandon your camp. You're down at, you know, you're down at the pavilion doing whatever, having a good time, and come back and your stuff's all pilfered because there's nobody.
Isolated
that nobody, you know, they can get away with whatever. Whereas at Rob's, you're pretty much all in the same meadow. So somebody will see something if something happens. So even if like one family decides to stay behind, they kind of have a whole view of the land. So it's not like you're just, you know, you're not like isolated. So the theft hasn't really been I haven't heard anybody talk about that. If anything, people were talking more about the bears than they were anything else.
That's cool. I'd rather deal with bears than thieves.
Man. Well, there's some people that were a little like freaked out and like they said they left early because of the bears. Because I guess people don't realize that, you know, you are in the wilderness and you need to like take all the proper steps. Like, you know, don't have your coolers sitting here with certain stuff. And some people would have like, you know, just have the normal trash and they woke up. They're like, yeah, we woke up and the bear was like in our trash, like tearing everything apart. And it's like, well, that's what happens when you guys don't take care of your camping, you know, necessities. So, So we'll see what happens. We'll see how this one turns out this year. I'm looking forward to it.
What are the dates this year?
I'm going to have to look it up. It's July. It's like the third weekend of July.
I'm feeling all nostalgic here talking about Axial Fest. I'm like, man. It's like, what, a 13-hour drive? That really isn't that far.
When's the last one you've been to?
2017.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
It should really be July 18th through the 20th, 21st, whatever you want to call it. Because I don't know if anyone's – I guess everybody still stays till Sunday. I typically just hit up Friday and Saturday now due to my work schedule.
So they don't have power then? If you're, like, camping in a big meadow and stuff, there's no power there?
No, but they have charging stations. So, like, Yeah, you could roll up. They have like they're just like dedicated. You know, they ran like power cords out to this one table, kind of like in vendor row, and you could just plug in your batteries and you like walk off. And there's somebody sitting there, so like you can leave your stuff, you know, head out, come back, grab your battery, and keep going.
That's pretty cool. Nobody brings generators or anything though.
So there are, and that's the other thing. They have a noise. Shut off. So like at about 9 o'clock, they want you to shut off all that stuff. So if you do have generators running, you got to kill it all around, like, I think it's like 9 o'clock. So, so that way,
that's cool.
You
know,
people,
I mean,
people can like sleep and all that stuff
during the day. I mean,
yeah. So
nice.
But yeah, I mean, but they have like a full on like restaurant there, kind of thing. And then they bring in, a couple catering trucks. So, it's really good. So it's not like, whereas like, I think like Cisco, like you like were kind of more camping because they didn't have the catering trucks. They didn't really have any of the on-site food. Whereas this one, you get all that. So, it's definitely a give and take. So, but I, like I said, I think it's growing, or at least the grounds are growing. So you're going to, the experiences are going to get better and better as years go on. I think the first couple of years, like the ones that we're in right now, are that's where everyone's working all the kinks out.
Did you ever get pizza from the pizza truck in 2017 that was parked over by us in the Proline booth?
No.
Oh, dude.
I don't think I did.
It was so memorable.
It was fantastic. That was really cool. They had like this crazy trailer with like a big pizza oven on the back end of it and stuff.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we never, now you are reminding me, they did bring in the food, but like, I remember the, when they first started bringing it in, it was more for the staff. So like all the Axial crew, all those guys got to get the food off the truck. Everyone else was still, you know, bringing their own stuff. And we always had Ben Naputi that camped with us, and that guy can grill like no one, like nobody's business. And so
grill
we always,
ate,
yeah, we always ate really well at Axial Fest. We had short ribs. We'd have, we had chicken. I mean, all kinds of stuff. He would just whip it up, and like, it was always really good. So, we never really worried about the food.
You know, thinking about that, like logistics wise, for Horizon to feed the staff and stuff. I mean, you can't really ask the employees to bring, you know, whatever, unless you reimburse them or give them per diems or whatever. But I mean, like trying to feed everybody, I mean, that's like no small task, especially at somewhere that's remote like that too. You know, I mean,
yeah. It's
not like you can just run down the street and get Taco Bell for everybody.
No.
Yeah. Those guys work so hard too. They're like working 24 hours a day for like the whole entire weekend and all the setup beforehand. People don't know how much work goes into putting on those events.
Oh yeah. I mean, God, the miles they must log just trying to like lay out trail and stuff. I mean, it's, yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. That was one thing that always bothered me, was when people would like bitch about stuff with Axial Fest and everything, especially pre-Horizon, when it was like the group of people that all of us knew really, really well. It was like, dude, you guys don't understand like how much of them, like they put so much of themselves into what they're doing to put that event on for you guys. And you guys are talking about, you know, how $60 is too much to pay and it's a ripoff and it's turned from a customer appreciation event into this big money making thing. And it's like, dude, it's $60. Like, come on. I mean, that's, you know, and you get most of that back just in the like goodie bag that you get at sign up. So, I mean, yeah, it was really hard not to take a lot of those criticisms personally when you knew the people that were behind the scenes making it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah.
And Trav never got his internet back.
What's funny is like, I was actually nervous about that. We lost internet yesterday.
Well,
I'm telling you, it's the Aurora Borealis, all the magnetic field stuff. Everything's going freaking haywire.
Probably. I mean, after looking at that map from Comcast, like it probably is some truth to that. I mean, that was a lot of outages.
What was weird for us was, so I have AT&T. We're sitting there, we just finished dinner, we're watching whatever finals game was on, and all of a sudden the screen just froze, and I was like, okay, we stream, so I figured it probably just crashed or whatever. So I go to change channels and the next channel is just black, and I'm like, okay, and I go back and then that one was black, and I'm just like, what the heck's going on? So I went out to the garage, red light. I was like, that's weird. So I logged on my phone to check the outage map, and it was just where we were. It was like a 6-block, like just rectangle of like your service is out. There's nobody else, like nobody for miles around had outages. So I'm like, what, someone like drive into one of like the power poles or something? So
what's ironic about all of this is like, me with living on the island, we have no choice of internet other than this little dinky company called Astound that used to use
It's not a little dinky. They're in Northern California too.
Oh, Astound is? Oh, mm-hmm. They're like, I don't know. I complain about them a lot, but I mean, like their hardware was like for a long time, hand-me-down stuff from Comcast. It was like whatever the previous generation was is what we would get here. And it was just super funny that like today of all days, like everything's worked flawlessly for me. And like Travis is really close to Denver, you know, in this big metropolitan area, and uses Comcast, and like, you know, for him to be having internet issues is kind of funny compared to, you know, me out in the middle of the boonies. Now that I said that, something's going to happen. Watch. I just jinxed us.
Well, what's funny is Astound, I started noticing, like, back when we got a lot of hotels, that was like the go-to, like, so I don't know if they had some like deal with all the hotel chains, but it was Astound was the, you know, service provider that they use. And then now you
because it was Wave before, it was like Wave Cable or something was the name of the outfit that we used before, and then it changed to Astound.
Yeah, which was Wave. Yeah, and then Wave Broadband, Wave, all that stuff. Yeah. But yeah, we still see it every once in a while in the, you know, down the street, we'll see an Astound van, you know, setting something up.
Wow. I didn't know that you even knew about like Wave and stuff. I thought they were like some tiny outfit here that only we had.
No,
they were so bad. I mean, Astound is a little bit better, but we had way more issues when it was Wave.
No, actually, the one that's bad is Suddenlink. So, and that's the stuff. So there, so that I was probably a small outfit there. So they're up at the little community that we go to up in Auburn, Lake of the Pines. That's like the, that's what that housing community uses. That's like the only contract they have. So you're forced to use their stuff. And they had a nickname for the longest time called Sudden Drop, because you just be, everything would be fine. And then boom, you just lose internet for like 20, 30 minutes and then it would come back. But yeah. That one,
things are slowly getting better here. Like, I mean, my cell service still isn't the greatest, but like today, I mean, well, most of my friends have iPhones, but like with Haley, I can't really send pictures very easily typically, but it's been working really well. But like normally to send something to somebody who's got like an Android phone or something, I'd have to like go outside and walk up the street until I'd have enough service to be able to send something. But like today, I mean, like middle of the house, I was able to send stuff. So it's slowly getting better here and we're becoming more connected to the outside world, which is nice. After, you know, 11 years of roughing it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a basic necessity now. I feel like there'll be a day when we'll look back and be like, oh, there was a time when like not everyone had good internet, you know? I think it's just someday we'll all have like satellite internet.
Well, I saw somebody posted this this funny, I guess you say meme, whatever. They were like, I make my kids have to watch the AOL dial-up before they get on the Wi-Fi, just so they can appreciate how well the Wi-Fi is now.
It's way better now. I know. Yeah.
Those days. Yeah. Nobody will ever understand the struggle that we went through in the early days of the internet.
Well, it's not just internet. It's everything. Cell phones. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
Like it's just now that you have everything at your fingertips, it's like, it's kind of like yesterday when we lost internet. You're like, all right, what do you do? I actually had to bust out, because we stream everything. I actually had to bust out DVDs because I was like, all right, what are we going to do? Like, there's nothing to watch. So yep. I was like, all right, time to see what we got on DVD. Which,
well, that happens here in the wintertime, you know, because like we're in the middle of a lot of old growth forest here and like the trees are, you know, like all 100 feet plus. And so we lose internet constantly in the wintertime because it's really windy here and branches blow down and stuff, and so it always takes out the power, always takes out the internet and stuff. And so it's like, yeah, you're reverting back to like DVDs on your laptop and stuff, and I mean you can't even play Xbox or do anything. I mean, it's just,
well, and that's primitive. it's funny you say that, because that was one of the first things I said, all right, I said I haven't done this in a while, I'll hop on Xbox. There's all the games that you play now are connected to the internet, that even if you try to play just the normal storyline, like there's something that doesn't work because they're like, oh, you're not connected, so we can't download this. And you're like, are you serious?
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. I mean, it's, you don't just pop in a disc anymore and just play it. It's, you need to have a connection. Otherwise, forget it.
Which is, that was the frustrating part, because I actually started out with, I was like, all right, I'll play some GTA. So I popped in the disc and it said, because it couldn't connect to my account, basically it started you over at the beginning because it didn't know where to load the game. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, everything's like on Steam now, or like online. You have to put in that code anymore of the disc. Yeah. You have to like have an online version. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. The future.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of
back in my day.
Yeah. Well, it kind of scares me because it kind of makes you. Well, we've already seen it with some of the smaller mom and pop hobby shops, but it kind of reminds me of like watching with what's going on with the video games. So I remember going to GameStop and you can buy whatever game it is that you need. Well, once they went to all the digital copies where you can just download it on your system, those stores are slowly starting to become non-existent because what do you need to go to it for? And the same thing's kind of happening with RC. You have, you have the mom and pops that are closing down because they can't compete with the bigger names and even just Amazon. So
AliExpress and stuff, all the overseas stuff.
So, yeah.
I mean, I asked one of, cause I've been doing the, like pitching the hobby shop series to, you know, different companies and stuff. And, I asked, I think it was Horizon, one of the big companies. I was like, do you see, cause they, you know, they stock a lot of their stuff and all the hobby shops, our hobby shop is actually closing down. And they told me like, we don't see a drop in the number of shops. Yeah. Some will close, but then we have some open up. So to me, that was like good to hear that it may seem like some are closing down in some areas. Probably that's more frequent in certain areas where there's like economic decline, but overall, generally they said that they're not seeing like a huge decline in shops. So
that's good.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Well, and it seems too like Horizon's actually taken steps to steer people to local shops and stuff also. So, I mean, it's not how it was a couple of years ago when Horizon was like the enemy in Tower and stuff like that. And, you know, they actually make an effort now to
encourage people to go in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I hear a lot too, like people, you know, seeing some of the shops that I feature on my channel and they're like, oh my God, I wish I had so-and-so, even, the one in Sacramento and stuff, Fast Track Hobbies, people are like, oh my God, I would die to have something like this in my area just to be able to go in and pick up, you know, connectors or batteries or just, you know, it's just nice to have a spot like that. And not a lot of people do have that. So when take advantage of it.
And actually I've mentioned this on our show numerous times. We had a little local shop, one town over that was, you know, my go-to for all the little consumables you need. You needed last minute paint,
something quick,
batteries, you know,
paint for sure.
You could go pick it up. They closed and now I got to go down to San Jose.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, there's nothing close anymore. So it's like, okay. Like last year before AxioFest, I was scrambling for paint for the pro body. And I was like, I can order it and it might be here in time for me to get everything done, but
they all ground ship it. Yeah.
I gotta just go down and see what they got. So, it's a little frustrating. So one wasn't really a hobby shop. They just had a hobby department, but it was a toy store that was in San Mateo. That was the one that got me into RC. And they closed down 2018. And then this other one, J&M Hobby House, they closed right after, probably about 21, 22, right after the pandemic.
Yeah, interesting. It'll be interesting to see like what happens because we're like in post-pandemic life now, you know, and I think a lot of shops kind of saw the huge surge during the pandemic and stocked up, and now we're kind of back at the leveling out phase. So hopefully they weathered the storm. Fingers crossed.
It does seem like things have kind of slowed down since the pandemic. Like that was funny. I mean, that was actually like one of our busiest times was during all of that mess. I think that was like when we had some of our record sales was during that period. So, but well, what was it's considerably dropped off.
Yeah. And what was interesting during that time, and it's not just with RC, it was pretty much with any outdoor hobby. It was like, okay,
bike industry,
you weren't allowed to go to work or you're supposed to like whatever. So people would be like, all right, what can we do as a family? We're going to go camping. So they started buying campers, bikes, kayaks, boats, whatever, to go do stuff as a family. So it trickled into the RC. They're like, hey, we bring these with us. Kids can have fun. We're out doing whatever. And I think that's what happened. Cause then now that everything's starting to get back to normal, you see a lot of that stuff going up for sale. Like there's a lot of people that got into that whole van life and they had like all the, you know, camping vans and all that stuff. And they're starting to go up for sale now. Cause they're like, you know, they bought it because that's what they thought everything was going towards. And then now that everything's kind of like back to normal, they're like, we don't need it anymore.
Yeah. Well, that and just the economy is just crap right now too for a lot of this stuff. That and gas prices. I couldn't believe it. The other, what's gas where you're at right now, both you guys?
490 something, 480. I don't know.
Wow. Rookie numbers.
What are you?
Average is about 589.
I know. California, whoa, man. It's crazy.
Diesel. So the hard part with diesel, is it's like hit or miss. So we were just down in San Luis Obispo last weekend, and I don't know if they just like know that because it's a touristy area that they're like, we're going to, you know, we're going to up the prices, because as soon as you roll into that town, everything's about 40 to 50 cents more expensive than anywhere else. And you're just like, what's wow. Like, I just don't get it. It's not like you're going off the beaten path. You're still on 101. You're just pulling off into another town. But yeah, like you pull into town and regular is like 589, premiums like 605, 610, and then diesel's about like 620. And you're like, this is ridiculous, because I was just, you know, three towns up, like by like Paso Robles, and diesel's like 589 and regular gas is like 569. So what's the hike?
Wow. Uh-huh. Yeah, like, so I was in Anacortes the other day, which is probably 45 minutes away from I-5. So it's kind of, you know, it's not like off the beaten path, but it's out of the way and it's a small island. And the cheapest I found there was 422. And I think average for like where I am and then Anacortes seemed to be like anywhere from 459 to 479. And the whole reason why I brought this up was there was a lady that lives in Utah that was complaining about 284 a gallon for regular. It's like, are you serious right now? 284? I was like, that's
awesome. That's, yeah, but I don't. So that's what's crazy is I think everywhere eventually kind of like just caught up, because we did that trip back in 21, summer of 21 or 20. Yeah, summer 21, we went to Colorado and Utah, and everyone kept saying, once you leave California, the prices just drop. And I don't know if it was like everyone was just kind of like, you know, gouging everyone back then or what, because it really didn't drop much once we got out of California. Nevada was maybe 10 cents cheaper and maybe 20 cents cheaper when we hit Colorado. We were still paying like in the high threes, and it was about that in California.
No wonder everybody's selling their RVs and stuff. I mean, that
well, especially when you get,
my God, dude, being in California, I mean, like that would be such an expensive trip to go from like Oregon or Washington to Axial Fest, pulling a travel trailer. I mean, it's like thousands of dollars in gas.
So, you know, it's bad when, I follow a couple of pages on Instagram and, they were doing a kind of like bash on California gas prices. And of course they picked a gas station that we know historically in this area is always been higher, even before the high gas prices, they were always higher and no one could ever figure out why. And it's funny because it popped up in my feed and it was just like, I know that gas station that's right over here on Alameda, like two towns over. It's not that he goes, and it's just funny because it's like, you see it every day, so you don't think anything of it other than, I don't know why those prices are so high, and you never see anybody in the station.
We have a Shell station that way in Stanwood, which is a town closest to us, and they're always like 10 to 20 cents a gallon more than everybody else. And there's two gas stations directly across the street from them too. It's like, why? Like, why would you ever? I mean,
this isn't shop there. And I'm not talking like 20 cents more. They're like almost a dollar more than anywhere else.
Yeah.
Dude,
so if the bill, the sign, I'll find it and I'll send it to you. The sign that the account shared, was it one of their record ones? It was like, I want to say it was like 710 for regular, which is just, I mean, like, is absurd. Like nobody else
or something, or is it just what everybody else is selling?
No, it's what everyone else is selling. But there's a lot of now there's this whole thing that supposedly they're under investigation, because supposedly it was like there's word that it was a money laundering.
Laundering. That's what I was thinking.
So, because they were, because we all know anybody that's grown up in this area has always known that that gas station was more expensive. Like if everywhere else was selling it for about $3.50, they were just over $4. And you're just like, no one could ever figure out why.
I mean, there's no incentive to go there whatsoever. No. I mean, it just, that makes no sense. I mean, there's certain things that you pay attention to, like, you know, you go to gas stations that are busier because the fuel's not going to be sitting in the ground as long and we're not moisture in it and stuff like that, you know? So, I mean, there's like certain like reasons why people shop where they do when it comes to stuff like that. But I mean, that's, I don't know. Nothing makes sense about a dollar more a gallon.
No.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, Haley. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, when I was in Texas like 6 months ago, I was visiting the Traxxas warehouse, and right outside there was a gas station. It was $2.99. I took a photo of it. I was like, I haven't seen $2.99, a two in gas prices in a long, long time. So 1 point for Texas.
That's crazy. I remember the year Travis was born, 1998, gas was like 99 cents a gallon. I was spending like $400 a month in gas, driving to work and back in a full-size Ford pickup, and like thinking about what that would have cost now. It was like a 13-mile commute. No, 18 miles. But God, it's just, it's crazy how all of that stuff's changed.
Got to drive the rally car everywhere now.
Just about. I mean, like my F-150 that I usually drive, like, I mean, it's like anywhere between 13 and 15, but I mean, like, that's still really expensive. I mean, to fill the tank up, it's, you know, almost $100 right now. So it's like, it sucks to take the rally car somewhere, but when it gets, you know, God, I mean, the other day when I went to Anacortes, like almost 40 miles per gallon, it's like, okay, you know, I'll feel silly for 40 miles per gallon driving it around.
I wish I knew what it was like to fill up for $100.
How much is yours?
I can't imagine.
I can't get out of a gas station for under 150.
It's crazy.
And that's the thing that sucks too, is when it's something that's consumable like that, because immediately my mind jumps to like all the fun things that I could do with $150. You know, it's like, dude, I could go see the new Planet of the Apes movie, and I could even get some popcorn. I mean, it's like you can stretch $150 really far, but when it's like you spend that just to go somewhere, you know, and there's very little return on any of it, that's really hard to handle.
Well, what's hard to also handle is knowing the fact that when I first bought that truck in 2019, I was able to fill up the truck for under $100. That's how much inflation has hit.
That's gnarly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I empathize with people that are, I mean, because, you know, we're all normal people, like roofs over our heads and stuff, but I'm sure it's tough for a lot of people out there right now that don't have that. So,
well, I've noticed like a trend, cause I'm in construction. I've noticed that if you're not like a higher up in the company or like a foreman, like foreman style, that, you know, they give you a company truck, all the employees are showing up in little cars because they're commuting 20, 30 miles to go to work, and they're not going to do it in a pickup truck.
Yeah, you would have to. I mean, you would have to have some beater Metro or something. I mean, just that would be a necessity. Well, and the housing up here too. I mean, God, it's just, my heart goes out to you, Haley, for trying to find a place here. It's so bad.
It's like the worst time,
especially,
to look for a place.
Oh, yeah. There, I mean, I would say probably next to like maybe Adams area, we have like a massive homeless crisis up here. I mean, it's a big problem. I mean, we have people living at like rest stops and stuff on the freeways. Like, it's, you know, and the cops come and clear everybody out. And like, you go into like downtown Seattle and people have like old beat up motorhomes and they're just living on, you know, parked on the side of the road. Like it is so gnarly up here.
Oh, yeah, it's hard to find a place
when you have a job, let alone don't, you know?
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine like being like single income or something? I mean, it's just how in the world would you ever make that work? I mean, $2,500 a month for an apartment that sucks. I mean, that's pretty tough to stomach.
Yep.
Then try in the threes.
Oh, dude, that's what I've never understood is like, what the hell kind of job do you have to be able to afford something like that? Cause like California was that way. I mean, way back. I mean, I remember there was friends that I would ride with that did, FMX, you know, like freestyle moto. And, one of them, we were talking one day and he was like, you know, I take down about 180 grand a year and stuff. And we were talking about like homes and everything. And he had just bought a house and it was a shitty tract home and it was still like $1 million. I mean, it was just, I've never understood how Santa people can like afford that. To live there. It's nuts. I mean, everybody like work in the tech industry or something. I mean, my God.
Pretty much. Yeah. There's a lot of tech money. People coming in with like all cash. And they said like to be able to afford a place by yourself in California, you have to make like $120,000 a year just to make ends meet.
Yeah.
And the most I've ever made was like right before the housing market had crashed. The most I ever made in my life was like $5,000 a month salary, you know? And it was like, I that is not enough to be able to live down
there. It's not like livable wage anymore. I know.
And yeah, that's, so the other thing is, especially here, the tech industry at the beginning really ruined everything based on the incentives, because at the time when I was working for my parents, I was at a client's house and they were telling us how they moved there from Minnesota because her husband got a job with Google and Google said, you know, like we'll pay up to, you know, 60% of your housing to live out here. So what's happening is once you get these, you know, landlords, a lot of the rentals, they know that, hey, they're going to pay. They just start jacking up the rents. And then the people that lose out are your everyday people that are, you know, working normal jobs because they're not, they don't have a tech job. And then,
that makes sense. Yeah.
And then some of that has fallen out because I've seen a lot of the layoffs as of lately, but at the time you couldn't compete with that. And then the other thing that wasn't fair, especially like this family, they're like, yeah, so we didn't even sell our home in Minnesota. We just put it up for rent there. And then we're out here and we only have to come up with 40% of the rent. So that pretty much gets covered by part of our renting back home and this, that, and the other. You're like, so that's how you guys are making it work.
Yeah. But if you didn't buy a house in the last 5 years, you're effed.
Oh yeah. The place across from us right now is for sale for $465,000, doesn't have a garage, 2 tiny bedrooms. It's ancient and just like, it sucks. Like there's no way I would ever live there. And for it to be $465,000, like that just blows my mind. I mean, it is such a piece of shit for that amount of money. It's just crazy. We sound like such old people. We sound like the three oldest people.
We haven't talked about RC.
You're just bitching.
Travis is going to cut all this out. We're going to have like a 5-minute show.
We sprinkle RC in there.
You guys start talking about the weather next. Yeah, we did talk about a little bit of RC.
Well, I was going to say before it gets too late, did we have questions?
Oh, yeah. Duh. I feel like since we dropped that one episode, it feels like forever since we've actually done this. Yeah. So I guess since we don't have Travis, I will be question guy. So we'll start on Facebook. Sorry, I wasn't prepared here.
We never are.
We'd be shocked if you were.
Par for the course.
When we usually are prepared, then that's when we have like the major problems, like Jay loses power, something crashes, you know, can't get something to record. That's typically what happens. That's why we just wing it now, because we never know what we're going to get.
Yep. The best laid plans. All right. So Chris Trudeau to Adam. Why am I so late to the party and appreciating the joy of leaf springs? 2 leaf trucks in my collection currently. Almost all my trail trucks are hard bodies now. Should I be worried?
No. Honestly, it's like I've gone back and forth. Like at one point I was doing a lot of hard body builds and then I went back to Lexan and then now I'm slowly going back into hard bodies. It just really depends on what you're trying to build. If you're trying to build like a super scale truck, you're not going to get it, in my opinion, out of the Lexan. I mean, you can get pretty close to some really nice scale builds with Lexan, but you can just detail out a hard body a lot easier. There's usually more detail. Most of the hard bodies, like if you're going with like something from RC four wheel drive, you're getting it an interior or half an interior. So you're getting that depth. So I wouldn't be worried. The hard part is wheeling those, you got to worry about breakage because they're heavier. So when they fall, they explode. So, my six, my Escalade, that thing's held together with a lot of shoe goo and Bondo. So, also just because that body is so old and brittle that it was just falling apart to begin with. But anyways, and then the leaf spring, it's a different style. I actually don't have a leaf sprung rig that's finished. I have one in the making, just haven't finished it. But yeah, the leaf springs are, you know, starting to gain popularity, mainly because this guy Twisted Fab that's here in the Bay Area, he's like perfected the leaf springs. So like he's making custom leaf springs basically off the Trailfinder 2 platform, and he's making them a little bit longer, different styles of spring material. So you're getting more flex out of them. So there's more performance out of them. So you're not getting like an out of the box, you know, TF2. But you're not getting the, you know, the linked and the coilover suspension like on all the other rigs, but it's still enjoyable to run because everybody, like, it's like its own little like sub, I guess you could say, sub genre in this area. Like there's a lot of people, like there's a lot of leaf sprung fanboys that are like, they, you know, that's like the new thing. They're like, I'm building a leaf spring rig. Like you go on their Facebook page, there's somebody always looking for a Twisted Fab, you know, rig.
Wow.
So yeah.
Andre and I have been collaborating back and forth with, we're trying to come up with a complete bolt-on kit for Element so that you can take an Element rig and just no welding or brazing required and just bolt on a set of leafs. So that's something that we've been kind of working on. So well, hopefully we'll have that finished for too long.
Well, I was going to say, Haley's got the, that short-lived conversion for the axial where you were able to put the leaf sprung or leaf springs underneath it.
Do you still know? They still make that anymore. No. Yeah. I still do have that truck and everyone's like, why don't they make the leaf spring conversion? I don't know what the answer is.
That was a short-lived conversion because by the time I was like, you know what? I think it's just be easier if you buy the kit. They discontinued it. That was like, I think it was out for like 6 months. And it was discontinued.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about leafs either. Like I can't exactly like put my finger on why I want a leaf rig other than, you know, it's scale. Cause you know, like the one that I'm going to do is a 12 inch wheelbase Scout. And I thought, well, that's, you know, out of everything that I have, that's kind of the perfect rig for it. Cause you know, coilovers and links aren't exactly super scale on a Scout, but yeah, I don't know. It looks like fun. It's something I've always been interested in, but with having the Element rigs, there's never been an easy way of going about doing it. And so that was why I hit up Andre and was like, hey dude, we need to make something happen for these. Cause I mean, it's, you know, a couple times a week, I'll see somebody post something in the Element groups asking if anything's available. So hopefully this will fill that kind of niche in the market. And then let's see, Chris said, with Jay getting into the rallycross side of things, will you be racing side by sides anytime soon? Adam.
Me racing side by sides? I thought it was a question. I thought that was a question for you.
No, it just I don't know. This looked like it was all at Adam.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't have a side by side and no, so I wouldn't be racing it anytime soon.
Given gas prices.
Huge money pit, yeah. Let's see. Peter Nielsen, did Jay miss any shifts, catch any air? I didn't miss any shifts necessarily, but I did try. I didn't have the best luck with the paddle shift setup. I still need to work on keeping my hands at 10 and 2 and leaving them there when you turn. But the problem is with what we're doing, everything happens so fast that, like, our very first run of the day was really, really good. And I didn't touch the shifters at all. I just left it in sport mode. Their timing system didn't pick us up, and like us and the guy behind us had to start over. And our second run was such a stinker because, like, yeah, oh, it was the first run felt good. Like, I was a little too like enthusiastic going into some of the turns, and we got a little slidey in spots. But the second run was so slow because the steering wheel would turn and it would be like upshift is over here and downshift is over here, you know? And so it was like, I couldn't do it fast enough. And so there's a couple corners where we're just like on the rev limiter the entire time, just, you know, and like not upshifting. And so we had just a super, super slow lap for the one that actually was counted. So, I mean, yeah, I guess you could say that's kind of the same thing as missing shifts. It was pretty catastrophic. That and the cone was kind of the nail in the coffin for us for the day.
Yeah. Yeah, with the, it's a 2 second penalty if you hit a cone, and then you're kind of like slowed down a little bit if, you know, once you restart and stuff. So, but I think if you would have, well, like,
so confused,
minus the cone incident, it was all pretty good.
Yeah, that first run, I think we would have been in the, you know, 140 area that it should have been in. But like the cone, like I fumbled so bad when we hit that because, you know, I know what the course workers have to do as far as like running out on the course and grabbing the cones. And so we had driven over it and like I could hear it stuck underneath the car. I was like, well, shit, what do? I like stop and back up so that we can get it out? Because I was thinking like, well, if I keep going.
Those cones have seen so much.
But I was like, if I keep going, like this poor dude's going to have to run like half a mile to go get
the
cone back to like put it right
back. Don't worry about the cone. You know?
That whole episode.
Treat it like Mario Kart. It'll eventually shoot out the back and take the next guy out.
It did.
And the guy got the picture of it too. Like, a guy has a picture of the cone like getting ejected out the back of the car and everything. So it was pretty funny. Like, when I saw that, I texted up to her. I was like, check it out. We were caught in the
It's all like zoomed in and the cone's like coming out the back. It was pretty funny. It felt like, it's crazy once you see the footage of the car, like it just looks like you're driving around a course, but when you're in the car when it's happening, it felt like the car like complete, like we were gonna do like a 360.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but it literally went like
yeah, it was just no big deal. Like, we were like maybe at a 45 degree angle at the most, and like when it happened I was just like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. It fully felt like we were gonna spin out. Like, it was just it's crazy how dramatic it felt. And plus, I mean, like, it really caught me off guard because that was the first time that I've ever lost control of a vehicle before, you know. And this was, you know, it's really the best way I can explain it is like it all happens so fast that you just are barely having time to process what's going on. And it felt way worse than it was. So
yeah,
we had some good laughs about that afterwards. So, Chris Trudeau again, has Jay found a replica Ken Block driving suit in his size? No. I probably wouldn't anyways. I mean, maybe like to hang on the wall or something, but I don't think I would ever wear some Ken Block pajamas around.
It was pretty cool oh, good.
No.
You're cutting off our guests.
I was just going to say that we, at Dirtfish, just for the audience that hasn't been there, they have a really cool like motorsports museum with like memorabilia from all around the world. And like all these, you go down this aisle and there's just racing suits on all the sides. There's like some F1 drivers and then in the corner, they had one of Ken Block's racing suits with one of the photos from him, like just getting some crazy air. It was really cool just to be like in the presence of greatness. And it was really neat.
Which is funny because I've been there so many times and I have never seen that suit in there before until that day when we were there. I've seen his co-driver Alex's suits. He has like two or three that are hanging up there, but I had never seen the Ken Block one before. And so that was just, I was really tempted to just be like, you know, touch it.
Like, your sweat has been in there.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty cool.
It was wild. That place is something else. I mean, like, it is definitely like the destination for all, all things rally.
Yeah, for sure. It's like the biggest rally school on the West Coast, they were saying too. So
yeah. Yeah. And it's not.
And they had like one of your cars on display. The ones you did BRZ. The graphics for.
Yep, the BRZ that I did for Josie there. That was kind of neat getting to see it. Does he regret replacing the orange graphics with the white? I don't know. I like the white. Everybody else like the orange. I did like a little Instagram poll, and I evidently made a mistake when I switched colors. Everybody liked the orange better, but that's how it goes.
It still has will there orange be a stage touches, rally like car on the mirrors.
Yeah, I like the orange just because it kind of tied in with like Travis's company logo that's on the side of it and stuff. And like, I'm big on like highlight colors, you know, like little accents and stuff. And so I definitely wanted to keep like orange part of it, but white wheels on rally cars is kind of like an iconic thing. And like, I really like how it looks right now. It's kind of clean. So, and the orange was just such bad quality vinyl that I used that I just didn't want to mess with it. Every time that I ordered more from those guys, it was never the same color orange. It was always different. And so I'd have like one door that's a lighter orange than the other. And like, I was just so tired of it. And I was just being dumb. I forgot that I had, like, from when we had our inkjet printer, I had this huge like 150 foot roll of gloss white vinyl. And I was like, God damn it. Why didn't I just use that? That would have made so much more sense. So I could have bypassed it and saved a lot of money in the beginning. And yeah, so I wasn't being very smart.
I think the car looks will there be a good though.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I personally, I like it better, but that's just me. Will there be a stage rally car in his future? No, actually, I have no interest in stage rally. I don't know how well I would do with a co-driver with, you know, like shouting out notes and stuff. That was actually something that Haley and I had talked about doing, because at our race, we didn't get to do a parade lap and check the course out in advance. So you were just like
blind.
Yeah, like pretty just much having to go for it, like your first time on the track, like hitting everything at race speed without really like even understanding like necessarily where everything is and stuff. And so, you know, we got to walk the course, thank God, and that helped, you know. And they had videotaped driving around the course and released that to all the drivers in an email the day before. But I mean, by the time we had walked it and stuff and done our first run on both courses, I was like, you know, it's a good thing that we didn't try and like write notes down like of what was coming up next, because it all happens so fast. And I think that's also one of the things that I like about rallycross versus stage rally is, I mean, for it's less of an investment, you know, like cages are $3,000 to $4,000 to have somebody build you a cage. And so, I mean, everything's got to be logbooked, and you need a fire suppression system installed in the car then for stage rally. So, I mean, it's like you're starting to get into like big money territory, yeah, you know. And with rallycross, it's shockingly affordable. And I like shorter sprint type things. I seem to excel at stuff like that a little bit more. I think a lot of it is because of my motocross background, and that's why I want to do rallycross. Like, ideally, eventually I would like to do like European style rallycross, where it's, you know, four cars on the course at the same time and you're, you know, racing wheel to wheel with people. That's what I would ultimately love to do. It's probably never going to happen because that sport just never gained traction here in the US. It was popular for a couple years, and then now, you know, we have like Travis Pastrana's Nitrocross series, and that's really it. But I mean, that's a huge investment to get into. I mean, you would have to really prove yourself as a driver to be able to get onto a team to be able to do that, because as a privateer, being able to build a car and afford to do it, there's just no way. So really, I mean, rallycross is kind of the best way to get your fix and stuff. And then plus, I mean, there's a lot of people that have died doing stage rally because of the speeds involved. And, you know, they're driving at, you know, 100, 120 miles an hour on gravel roads. And you've got somebody telling them, you know, like what's coming up next, you know, because you've only driven it in a regular street car once at really low speeds to figure out where it was. And then they take notes on it. So, I mean, it's pretty dangerous. You know, 47. I would like to, you know, make it past this a few years at least. So I just don't really see stage rally ever being in my future. It's not really something I'm interested in. Will we see an Apex rally replica in our future versus a Traxxas rally car? I don't know if he's talking about like me making one or not. I'd like to try and do a replica of our car. I think it'd be kind of cool. But yeah, I don't know. I was talking about like the Traxxas one when we were at Dirtfish, because I was like, you know, it'd be kind of neat to get a associated four wheel short course and throw one of the Traxxas Ford bodies on it, because it kind of sort of is the same shape as our car. So I thought that'd be kind of fun. So these ones are for Haley. What does Haley like most about Bellingham?
Well, so I haven't moved there yet, but I like that nature is like right out your back door. Lots of people that are super into like outdoor activities, whether it's like skiing or snowboarding or water sports or boating or sailing. There's just a lot of lots of waterways, and biking trails are super close. You're really close to Whistler in Canada, so there's a lot of like sort of international presence. Yeah, I think just a lot of people into similar hobbies that I'm into. Not a lot of like, there are like some, there's not like a huge RC shop or anything, so that's kind of one of the downsides, but there seems to be a lot of people like into mountain biking and RC crawling. So I think more hobbyists, less hobby shops presence there, but we'll see. I don't know. I'm still open to other places to live though. I'm kind of doing like spending some time visiting other towns and cities and seeing whether that's like my next place. But so far it's up there on the list with, I'm sure, so many other people. That's why it's hard to find a place to live, but yeah, Bellingham is a cool spot.
It's pretty scenic. I mean, that is a beautiful area to live in.
Yeah. It's cool. You can take ferries everywhere. Like just hop on a ferry. You can drive your car onto the ferries, motorcycle, and just like kind of tour around all the islands and stuff. That would just kind of my next thing, a little adventure I want to do is like take my motorcycle on the ferry and just explore all the little islands and stuff, drive around.
You should, because like the place of like Friday Harbor and stuff is awesome.
Yeah,
and,
like, I love that. And, so awesome.
So many cool places to go. This is a cool area to live. It's pretty yeah. Rad. Was the hobby room the last room to be set up or the first room to be set up? And I think he thinks that you moved. So we'll do this.
I know.
Yeah, we'll treat this
It'll
as
be the
a
first
water.
One though. Okay. It will be the first one. RC stuff is like, I'm just going to live in a place and like literally like the kitchen is just going to, it's like it is now. It's just spill out everywhere. It's just going to be RC. It's just going to be an RC house. There's not going to be a separate room. Pretty much.
It's really not a bad way to be. Will she be rebranding from RC girl to everything girl? RC, 3D printing, sim racing, mountain biking, co-driving, driving one-to-one.
It's kind of, yeah, I'm taking this year to like explore different things, and a couple like Bamboo Labs reached out and was like, hey, we have these printers, so I have those to like feature on my channel coming up, and trying to I got a 3D scanner, so I'm like, oh, that'd be fun to try out, you know, scanning your head.
Oh, did you? That's cool.
Driver. Yeah, I'm waiting for the latest firmware. Really cool. So I didn't get past like firmware install, so don't purchase it yet because it's still has some bugs, but yeah, it's just cool trying out different technology, and I'm grateful that I get to try out so much cool stuff all the time.
That's pretty rad. Scanner would be really cool. That opens up so many different possibilities.
Yeah, you can scan a body, scale it up or down.
Yeah, I mean,
that's pretty cool.
Any scale accessory that you could possibly think of, really. I mean,
seriously,
anything
yeah.
from coolers to a sleeping bag. I mean, you could do anything. God, that would be pretty rad.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying that out for sure. I'll let you guys know how it goes.
Well, I think that's it for our questions. It doesn't look like we had any on Instagram at all. So,
there was one. Let's see. I think it was who broke the car?
Well, I guess technically it stopped working when I was driving it.
Oh man! So okay, I had bad. Jay. No, it totally wasn't your fault. we were at the beginning, we got to Dirtfish, and I was like, oh, let's try and film some of the RC content first before, you know, all the cars roll in. And Jay was driving, I was getting down low. And then I was like, hey, can I play too? And so he passed it over to me, and then I get it, and like the steering went out. We were only driving it for like 10 minutes maybe. So
it was a weird thing too, because like it's got a servo saver in it, but it didn't look like it was adjustable. So, and it didn't look like there was just any good way to like bypass it, because it's almost like part of the steering rack or the post.
Yeah,
it's
like weird
inside. I mean, so it's like inconvenient to get to on top of everything else. But yeah, it was just a really weird problem. But I felt so bad, because like the whole time that I was driving to start with, she was filming, because you know she's used to filming and getting, you know, all the angles that she wants and stuff, because that's, you know, outside of my area of expertise. And so I was like, cool, you know, I'll drive and whatever. And so I was just so wrapped up in driving and stuff that when she went to start getting GoPro footage and stuff, I'm still driving it and just doing my thing. And like, I just felt so dumb, because like it didn't even like enter into my mind like, oh hey, maybe she wants to drive it now, you know, like. So yeah, I felt kind of bad.
No,
and by
fine.
The time all that happened, the car like wasn't even working right.
No, so it was the servo. I don't know. I've had that happen before. It like goes out immediately. But I brought an extra, swapped it out. We're good. I just thought it was funny. Like literally, I just get the car and it was fine.
Well, and then she's having me drive through this puddle that is like really close to her. Like, she was a lot braver than I would have been. But I mean, I was just like, are you sure you want me to go faster through it? Like, yeah. How close? You
know, I was like, go for it.
So yeah, she got kind of sprayed a little bit. So yeah,
yeah,
I just,
it was pretty,
I felt like a bad assistant that day. I really felt like
I think we got some good footage. I think the time that we did spend, we didn't get a lot of RC footage, but we were efficient and we got some good stuff. So
I like the stuff that was around that planter, like where the tires were kind of by the pit area. That was a really good spot. That stuff turned out really good. Yeah. What was a bummer was that Nate's interview didn't turn out, the audio on it. I don't know if I was standing too far away or what happened, but
no. Yeah, no, like, it wasn't your fault.
It was so good too. That sucks.
Yeah, I know. Nate, he was chief fantastic instructor at Dirtfish, and he's been there for like since the beginning, I guess 2010, he started with them, and he started with RC too. So it was pretty cool. I got him talking about like how he started with slot cars, and then he got started getting other cars, and then go-karts, and got into rally and stuff. So gateway drug RC. But it was so like, we're at a rally event and people are like testing out the cars in the pits and stuff. And so it's like, you can't hear any of the interview, which is totally fine, but just funny.
Yeah. That's a very RC receptive crowd, the rally community. They seem to think all that
funny
stuff's way cool. Well, I mean, it's just everybody's like diehard car people, and I think like if you're a car person, you seem to like RC cars and everything else, you know. Like that was one of the things that, you know, I had always wondered and talked to people about, like, well, for example, like Casey Curry at Axial Fest, you know. It's like Casey Curry gets to drive the sickest real off-road rigs that you could possibly want, but he's still like way into RC and like legitimately like super into it, you know, and
stoked
like
on it. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, cause
and
weird,
you wouldn't think.
Even during like a tech inspection for your car, we had the Fiesta Rally in the back seat. And one of the guys says, is that the new brushless Fiesta Rally? Getting all stoked on it. I'm like, we're literally like looking at this really cool full size rally car. And he's stoked on the RC version. It's funny.
It's funny. I mean, I like it just as much as, you know. I mean, driving is obviously like a pretty special thing to be able to go do and stuff, and I really like it, but like RC is still, I mean, I would never, you know, I don't think I could choose one over the other. I don't think if somebody was like, you know, hey, you're gonna race rallycross or drive RC cars, like that would still be a really tough decision to make, because it's just, there's something about like being outside of the car and being able to watch it like pivot around corners and see it slide and throw and roost around corners and stuff. Like it's just, no matter what you do, like the RC stuff doesn't get old. Like it's never not still cool, you know? And so I can't see that as ever being something that would go away. And it's neat seeing everybody else's enthusiasm for RC stuff when you kind of would think like, well, why would they even care about this? I mean, this dude's got a caged Subaru that's lifted. Like, why would he give a shit about an RC car?
I know.
Everybody's funny. Still super into it and stoked on him. So
yeah. And there's like, it's interesting too, because even there's this guy, Caddy FPV, and he goes to the rallycross races and he has this FPV thing and people hire him to film and chase their cars and stuff. So there's still like an RC presence. Maybe they don't see themselves as an RC hobbyist, but RC is still like very present at those events anyway.
His footage is so rad too. Oh my gosh. Like just the angles that he gets with FPV chasing cars it's around crazy. Is super cool.
Yeah. It's like air rally basically. Wild. Like doing the same course, but just in the air and stuff. It's pretty neat.
Well, and it was funny, the one video that he had gotten of me over the winter, like he was so close that like he's getting like water splashed on him when I'm going through puddles and stuff. And like, I mean, he gets like right up in there, like next to the cars and everything. He's a talented pilot. He really is. I mean, like the stuff that he does up in the mountains looks incredible. I'll have to send you a link to it, Adam. Like he goes up in the Cascades and stuff and flies like these ridges and valleys and stuff. And dude, it's amazing. It's stuff that you would, if FPV drones weren't a thing, it's views that you would never see in your life and perspectives that you would just never imagine. And it's just absolutely breathtaking. So really, really cool. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Neat that we have him as, you know, kind of part of the community and stuff. And then I got to see an FPV drone being flown for the first time when Haley busted hers out for getting some landscape stuff and everything, some terrain shots. So that was really cool.
My little Mavic Mini, the original, with no like obstacle avoidance and stuff. I just like get up, get some cool shots, and then I'm just done.
That was super cool. That was my first experience getting to check that out. That was pretty neat. And then,
there's some neat structures there. Like it's on an old lumber mill and stuff. So they have this like tower and I like went right above the tower. It's pretty cool. It's a very scenic area.
Yeah. Thank God. I think it's worth no, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no. It's worth mentioning though. Like anyone interested, even like remotely interested in rally or just wanting to check it out. I don't know if it's like all rally associations, but at least the Northwest Rally Association that, the race was a part of that we were a part of. You can sit co-driver with, you just ask any of the drivers and they allow you to sit as a passenger during the actual race. So it's free to spectate, I think, for most of the races. Mm-hmm. Ask any of the drivers, you can sit in on the race and rally with people. Just try it, check it out if you're interested.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's not many forms of motorsports where you can just hop in the passenger seat and go slide around corners and stuff. So that's pretty cool that they allow people to do that. I'm surprised it's not taken advantage of more, you know, like that was the funny part. I was telling Haley, I was like, you know, I was telling her, I haven't had one friend that has been like, hey, I want to go with you to a race and go for a ride. Like nobody, you know, like I've asked a couple people and they've been too busy or had something going on. But I mean, like, this was like the first time that somebody's ever like wanted to go and do it, which kind of blows my mind. Cause it's like, it's pretty fun. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't want to, but it's a good time.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool.
They had over 400 people come through the gates that weekend. That was wild.
Oh, wow. I was wondering. It's pretty cool because it was pretty rain. It was like not super sunny or anything, but I think like the rain and the water made like the spray of the cars like even that more dramatic. I think it looked really cool going around the turns and stuff, spraying all the rocks and water.
God, it was slippery. That was a slippery day. That was definitely a new experience for sure. I mean, the snow was one thing and the ice, like, but this was definitely like almost up there difficulty level with how slick it was. I was not prepared for that.
It
caused my surprise a few times. So
we saw a couple cars getting towed. One came back because you do it three times, so you line up in grid again, and one came back, the side was bashed in, missing like a side mirror. I was like, oh god. but that's
that part yeah of it, that know, was a good risk hit. It. That yeah that dude had that was a solid hit that he took with that car. When what was yeah,
didn't you say
it's a bummer
you I, saw oh go ahead
what's that no no sorry what were it. You asking
oh, oh no I was you, just when you were marshalling you saw a car like spin out or something.
Oh, somebody told me that a car had hit a building. Like I didn't know which one it was or like what run group and stuff, but one of the people was telling me in the control area, they're like, yeah, somebody hit a building earlier. I was like, wow, all right.
There's like no buildings around. I don't remember seeing any of the buildings around the course, but
the only one that yeah. I could think of was right off the start when we kind of went through that right-hander, then there was a chicane, and then we shot down that really wet asphalt road that had the like warehouse right at the end of it. That's the only one that I could think of that somebody probably would have gotten close enough to hit, which I mean, that was definitely like present in my mind when we were going down that for the first time, because I didn't really know like where our breaking points needed to be in order to like not slide through that corner and possibly hit that building. But I think that was really the only spot.
Yeah.
There was a NASCAR truck there, Adam. A dude showed up with a bright yellow NASCAR truck and ran that thing around the course, which was pretty wild.
Crazy. That's awesome.
Could rally anything. He broke. You really can't rally anything. Yeah. He was the one getting a tow.
Yeah, that was a bummer because I really wanted to see how that guy ended up for the day, because that was a very unusual vehicle to see there. I mean, we've seen a lot of weird stuff like the Tesla and a couple side-by-sides and some BMWs and things, but like
Jeep. Yeah.
Seeing the NASCAR truck was, yeah, God, that Jeep. That dude flew too. Like, did you get back early enough to see him run at all?
I did not. No, I missed that.
Fast. Like, as tall as that thing was, I would not have been cool taking some of the corners at the speeds that he was. Like, that guy was very comfortable with that Jeep. He was ripping right along, but it was just deafening too. I mean, my God, you could like feel that thing so in your chest when it would go by. It was, that thing was wild. Yeah, that guy hauled ass. That was pretty wild. Well, we should probably get jamming here. We're almost at 2 hours now.
Right at the 2 hour mark.
We can cut all the gas prices discussion out.
Yeah, I think I probably made some work for Trav this time. So, poor guy. He's a good sport.
Yeah, bummer we missed him, but.
Yeah. So anyways, well, thank you again for hanging out tonight and the other weekend. That was awesome. Had a lot of fun. I'm excited for you to get moved up here because it'll be nice to have somebody to go drive and film with and stuff and be able to show you some of the cool places to go crawling and stuff around here. And then there's a really nice on-road track that you'll be able to get some footage of your F1 car at. So that'll be perfect. So
it's funny because have I'm a lot of fun. I know. I'm moving from where Adam was to now where Jay is. Moving on north.
Then you're going to have to move to Colorado and go hang out with Travis.
I know. Check it out next.
There's not enough trees where he is. I picture Colorado as like, you know, forests and stuff, or like, you know, kind of high desert hills and stuff. And like, he showed me some pictures of where he lives and it looks like northern central California. It's like,
yeah, no, you gotta
I don't like it at all.
No, you gotta go out by, you gotta go on I-70 by, Aspen and all that and Vail. Yeah. That's where all the mountains and the trees are.
Yeah. This was pretty sparse. He showed me pictures, 'cause I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll move there, you know? And I saw that and I was just like, damn, dude, that looks just like Central Oregon. Like, that's not really my scene. Like, I need trees and greenery, and I don't know if I could do the whole high desert thing again. It's just 30 some odd years of growing up in that, and the dust and everything is just kind of, I think I've had my fill of that. So
yeah.
Well, anyways, all right, well, I better stop talking, otherwise I'll just keep going. So we'll stop here, and thank you everybody for tuning in. We appreciate it, and thank you, Haley, for coming on as a guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Adam, thank you for being Adam, and there we go.
All right, see you guys.